Good morning, Cowboys Nation, and welcome to another episode of the Writer's Block Podcast. This one is a special episode because this is our first time talking Cowboys since they've actually played a game, granted being a preseason game, but the Cowboys kicked off their preseason with their game in Los Angeles against the Rams. Of course, they ended up losing on a last-second touchdown pass from Stetson Bennett, but with football back and with us being able to talk about it, and in honor of Stetson Bennett throwing not one, not two, not three, but four picks, we have four people here on the Writer's Block this week to talk with us. Myself, the host, David Hellman, joined, as always, by Chris Holling, Brandon Clements, and a very special guest as well. Not only a special guest that we all know and love, but one of the co-founders of the original Writer's Block, Jess Navarez. Jess, welcome to the show. It's a privilege to have you on here. How excited are you that like preseason is back, training camp is back, Cowboys are like actually doing Cowboys things?
I am stoked, but I'm even more stoked to be on this podcast. So thanks for the invite, guys. To answer your question, it felt like football season again. Like the timeline was filled with football tweets, the notebooks out, and like I got my brand new notebook for the season. I'm taking notes during games, like trying to. It's like riding a bike, you know, like you have to knock off the rust and get back into game mode. So it feels like football season and that ending, like it's just so poetic for Cowboys fans, right? Like it really felt like football season with that ending. But overall, stoked, excited, and we have a lot to talk about, guys. There's a lot to unpack from that game.
Yeah, it really was like the most Cowboys way to end that preseason game too. Like the whole time, you know, we're excited to see Trey Lance. Tyler Guyton's looking good. The defense has four turnovers and we're like, oh, things are going great. Like this is going to be a good year. And then, you know, blow it on the very last second. Chris, you're brooding in your bat cave. It looks like for those watching on YouTube.
Yeah, I know.
It's
I wasn't
super dark. You're wearing dark. All black colors. Are you?
I was just trying to, well, my apartment does. My apartment doesn't have a overhead light and it suddenly got dark kind of outside. So I may go fix it real quick. I may like put some lights farther back. I don't know. I may turn off my camera while you guys are talking and try and get that situated.
No, leave the camera on. I want to see
you.
Like,
you want me to be in the bat cave? Okay. You'll just see my face.
It's very poetic. Like, okay. It's very poetic.
For all right. Us. I got you. It wasn't intentional, but I'll embrace it.
Brandon, we'll get into some of the specifics of this game, but of course the thing I have to lead with and that Chris tweeted out during the game, of course, you've been, as we all know, hyping up Ryan Flournoy that he's going to go not only make the team have a really good preseason, but he's going to lock down the wide receiver three spot for this team. He had a little bit of a rough go in this first preseason game. He had a dropped pass, he had a fumble. Obviously it's still early and there's a lot of things still going in the development for this rookie, but Chris was coming at you on Twitter during the game and I feel like we got to address that first and foremost. So how are you feeling about your guy?
I'm feeling fine. I mean, he had an injury during the training. He's had an injury that he's come back to. He just started getting in the game action essentially not that long ago. So he's had kind of a rough start with the knee situation. Now he's good. Like he looks pretty good. And I know we were talking off air and it sounds like he's really working his tail off, talking to everybody that's going to, you know, he's going to ask questions to everybody and try to get himself better. That's the kind of guy you want on the team. He's an athletic freak anyways. And I was very surprised on that first opportunity that he actually dropped it, because he doesn't drop passes. Like that is not Ryan Flournoy. Like I watched enough film on that kid and he does not drop passes. So that was very interesting for me. I think it's going to be a blip on the screen because I think he's got some of the most sure hands on the roster. In my opinion, the kid can go. And then obviously the jitters got him on that first grab where he fumbled it. Luckily it rolled out of bounds, but also got a shout out to our good friend of the program, RJ Ochoa, giving some Ryan Flournoy love too. So he hyped up the nice catch that Ryan Flournoy had. So he's flashing ability. I might have to backpedal just a touch on the receiver three talk. I do love this kid. He's got a lot of talent. I think he's obviously got some things to work on. I think the nerves got to him. Plus, you're taking live rounds. It's a little bit different, you know, in pads and in real action versus, you know, out in training camp. So this is it's a whole different thing right now. So I think he just needs a little bit more time. I do think week two coming up here in the preseason is going to be very important for him. And I think if he can show up, he's going to slide himself up the depth chart, because let's be honest, and I'm going to be frank, because I'm the Ryan Flournoy guy. He's not, like, at this point, he's not making the roster if this is what he's been doing and this is what he does, which is unfortunate, because as you guys know, I'm a Ryan Flournoy. Like, I'm the leader of the band, leader of the fan club, whatever you want to call it. It is what it is. He flashed a little bit, but to me, there were other guys that, you know, we were talking about before we recorded that, you know, flashed better than him, like a Jalen Cropper, which to me, Jalen Cropper, I'm not surprised about, by the way. You can go back and check out some of my old work at Blogging the Boys, and you can see that I actually hyped up Jalen Cropper before anybody else did. So I know a thing or two about this kid. He's a good player. So that's the guy who was he's making waves at this point that I didn't expect him to make. Like, at this point, I figured he'd be more of the receiver 5-6 type, but I think he's squaring the receiver 4, and he's going to give, give a run for receiver 3.
Yeah, Chris, I see you. I see Chris like chomping at the bit there. That's Chris Holling's music, ready to chomp in.
It's just frustrating to hear you say that because, because I mean, like, one thing you specifically said was that
Chris,
he's
before you start, I love that.
That's like a WWE intro. Like, it looks like you're ready to, like,
he's ready. Out.
You had such, like, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed energy.
I am. I'm disappointed. Guys, like,
it's not me.
Yeah.
It's you.
It's just disappointing. Yeah. Yeah. It's just disappointing because you mentioned that he has maybe the best hands in the receiving room. And obviously, you know, QD and then Brandon Cooks. But there's anyone who has the best hands in the receiving room. It's Jalen Brooks. He was targeted 6 times in 2023 and caught 6 balls. He was targeted twice in yesterday's game and caught both of them. And, you know, what's funny is that one of those targets last season really wasn't to him. He caught that ball that got tipped up in the air and he kind of flew in and saved it. I think it was the Seahawks game that happened in. And yeah, I mean, he had the longest play from scrimmage yesterday for the Cowboys, that a 43-yard pass, which honestly should have been a touchdown if it hadn't been a little underthrown, I think, by Cooper Rush. If there was about 10 more yards on that ball, that's a touchdown. He completely cooked the defensive back, but showed his ability to kind of adjust in midair and come down with the catch. I mean, I think Jalen Brooks is clearly the wide receiver 4 at this point. I don't think it's in question, especially considering the fact that he only really played, I think, what, one possession? He didn't play very long. So obviously Mike McCarthy views him in high regard, and he let everyone else play a lot longer than him. To me, I was a little frustrated that Jalen Tolbert didn't play. I don't think Jalen Tolbert has shown enough in his career so far to where he's just, you know, just like a lock to be the wide receiver 3. He's just a lock to be a starter off the bat. And I would have liked to see him get a little bit more reps, because I think that Jalen Brooks and Jalen Tolbert should be a neck and neck debate right now. I think that Jalen Tolbert offers a little bit more when it comes to, you know, his burst and agility after the catch, and, you know, his ability to kind of, you know, make defenders miss. But when it comes to reliability and, you know, catching balls and, you know, just being a good possession and, you know, 50-50 receiver, I think Jalen Brooks is right up there with the best that the team has right now in their locker room.
He's a 4-7 guy. Come on.
I know. Listen, I was about to say he's not fast, and I give Jalen Tolbert the edge on that, but I mean, he's reliable. If you need a third down conversion, I think that Dak Prescott will trust Jalen Brooks to get maybe a 3rd and 4, you know, maybe just, you know, just an easy possession or a 50-50 ball receiver, which that catch, because it was underthrown, was a 50-50 ball yesterday.
Chris, I'm just going to throw this.
And he's shown that reliability, like, to Chris's point, like, and it seems like every time that we're hearing about Jalen Brooks, whether it was his rookie year, whether it's been in training camp so far, we're hearing good things from coaches, from players. But I think that makes me even more impressed that Jalen Tolbert didn't get any reps in this preseason game. It's like that speaks volumes about how trusted he is by the rest of the team, by the coaches. Jess, what are your take on the Jalens? We've got obviously Tolbert and Brooks, and then of course Cropper, who I thought it was pretty darn good in this preseason game too.
Man, triple threat there. You know, here's what's so interesting about preseason is Last time I saw these guys in person, I haven't been to training camp in Oxnard, was during OTAs. And I could tell you, like, the guys that were standing out then, based on what I'm hearing from training camp, based on what I've seen, it's interesting because you even look at a guy like Racy McMath, who did not have a great game at all yesterday. He's had a fantastic camp. I mean, consistent in camp, consistent in his practice reps, and then game time came and didn't perform, right? So I think it's hard to say after the first preseason game, like, hold everybody's horses. Like, it is only preseason game one, and there's still such a long way to assess here in the next couple of weeks. But overall, I mean, I have been very high on this Jalen Tolbert train since last year. I have been lucky enough to really grow and establish a good working relationship with him since his rookie season. And I've seen him be stripped all the way down to be built all the way back up and even better than he was before. Something that he told me that he really emphasized this year was building an actual friendship and relationship with Dak and really leaning in on him, not just as a quarterback, as a friend, as a mentor. And you can see that. You see the unspoken chemistry there with them. So obviously, I think Jalen Tolbert has that spot on lock. And I think he's earned the right to not have to take any preseason snaps if he does. Very minimal, save him. You know what he's doing. It's consistent. That's the biggest thing for JT, is that you haven't seen that consistency until now. It's been nothing but consistent. His route running abilities, his dependability has just been insane. So I'm number one on that JT train all day, every day. I have been, because I've seen this guy, you know, be sad and in the dumps in the locker room, being upset that nobody even knows his name because he's struggling. And now he was, it was funny. I was talking to him and I said, they're going to see me talking to you and they're all going to come over here. And he's like, no, they won't. And sure enough, I was like, they're talking about you, JT, like they're going to. So the whole like slew of media comes over. We finish our conversation. Like after everyone leaves, I was like, I told you that we're going to come over here. Like you're a hot commodity because you earned it. So very great story for JT. As for Jalen Brooks, I worried a little bit during OTAs with his confidence level because it kind of seemed a little lower than what I'm used to seeing from a Jalen Brooks, a very positive locker room guy who's always upbeat. During OTAs, it seemed a little off. From what I'm used to seeing him, but it was also focus. Like he knew the task at hand. He's had a consistent training camp as well. I do think though, when you're thinking in terms of how this wide receiver room is going to shape out, you have to keep in mind the new special teams role and who could be next to Kevontae Turpin as that extra receiver, because they've had a slew of guys working in that extra spot. Deuce Vaughn is obviously out right now with injury, so he hasn't been in there. Usually he would be. You have a Malik Davis that's in the running, obviously not a receiver, but could change things if they decide to add another back to have him in there. David Durden has gotten reps. Jalen Cropper has gotten reps. Corey Crooms, I heard, could be getting some reps at that as well. So it just really depends, I think, on that specific thing, because that's going to be such an important part of your game. And unfortunately, I think for a guy like Jalen Brooks, he has the disadvantage with being like a smaller receiver compared to a David Durden. So I think that's going to play heavily into it. I'm just interested to see a little bit more of these next couple of weeks at camp in that regard.
Yeah, and I think too with the return game element as well, that's another area where like Kevontae Turpin didn't play at all in this preseason game, which also makes sense. You know exactly, you know he's your number one return guy, you know what he can do on offense. But it also gives you those opportunities with this new kickoff rule to see a guy like David Durden or Jalen Cropper, whoever they're gonna put back there. Hopefully we get to see some Deuce Vaughn in the preseason and he gets his health back on track. I had forgotten that he was injured, and at one point, I think after the first quarter, I tweeted out and said, I'm ready to see a small running back in this game. And then afterwards, I was like, are they really not playing him? And then I was like, oh, yeah, no, he's dealing with an injury. So yeah, unfortunately, that was disappointing.
And, you know, it's unfortunate because here's the thing. He's the guy that's like right on that line of that 53, mm-hmm. that it's going to come down to a game of numbers for that final 53, because you have to keep in mind, you have the stacked wide receiver room. You have a stacked running back room, which I'm hearing now you could even see a triple threat, not even a 1-2 punch. And guess what that would take away from your tight ends or your wide receivers. So again, it's a game of numbers. And I think unfortunately for Deuce, This injury could not have come at a worse time, because he needs every opportunity he can to show these coaches why he deserves to be on that 53 when it comes.
Yeah. And as someone who has staked my reputation on him having a big second year, similar to Brandon's claim about Ryan Flournoy being the wide receiver three, put it in pen because you don't need to go back and erase it. I'm hoping for him. So hopefully he gets a chance to get in there at running back, at kick returner, kind of show what he can do. But in talking about all these receivers, obviously there was a lot that we saw from all these different receivers. But part of the conversation, obviously, going into this game was the guy throwing it to him. We knew Cooper Rush was going to play very, very briefly, and he did. He came in, hit two or three passes, had that 48-yard bomb to Jalen Brooks, who did a great job of adjusting in the middle of his route, did a great job winning off the line, adjusting to the ball in the air. And then, you know, they settled for a field goal. Then it was the Trey Lance show. And there's a lot of hype going into Trey Lance finally playing a game with the star on his helmet. And I would say it was a mixed bag. That's the best way that I can put it. I don't have a whole lot of strong feelings one way or the other than Dak Prescott's price just went up because, you know, playing almost pretty much a full game against, you know, second and third stringers and not getting a single touchdown. I think if I'm Dak Prescott's agent, I'm going and saying that's what you what you've got for the next few years, whether it's Trey Lance or somebody else, if you don't make this deal happen. But as far as Trey Lance goes, you know, I thought there you saw a lot of good. You saw some of the reasons why he's not in San Francisco anymore. Chris, I saw you also tweeted out during the game that he was, you know, being given an unfair criticism for his performance. Granted, that was during the game. Do you still feel that way after watching the entire game?
Yeah, I still feel like that. I mean, I would give his performance like a C or C plus. I wasn't blown away or anything. I don't think he played awesome, but like, I mean, if you look at who he was playing with, pretty much all of his receivers were undrafted free agents. The offensive line really wasn't giving him a ton of time outside of Tyler Guyton. I saw a lot of drop passes and, you know, those throws that he was slightly off on, like if he had had a little bit more protection, he maybe could have, you know, thrown a touchdown on that one where, you know, it was fourth and one, he kind of threw that fade route. I think that was the wrong call. I mean, especially since he led your team in rushing yards throughout the game, I think you should have done a read option or a QB run or something. And let him use his feet. But either way, regardless, it's preseason. You know, the result isn't necessarily what matters. It's about seeing what you have. And, you know, I think that if he had a little bit more time, he wouldn't have had to rush that throw. And maybe he puts that more on the money. He had 41 attempts and only 188 yards. So, you know, it's not a great stat sheet. But I mean, I also have to put into perspective too that if he was, you know, thrust into a starting role sometime in the season because of an injury, which we're praying doesn't happen, I think he would have a little bit better results than that, you know, because yes, he'd be going up against the first string defense, which would be better than what he went up against the Rams, but he'd also have a lot more talent around him as well. He'd have a, you know, hopefully it's CeeDee Lamb, hopefully he's paid by then, you know, he would also have Brandon Cooks. He would obviously have, you know, more Jalen Brooks at the wide receiver three position. So I it's not a great performance, but it's not an awful performance. I saw a lot of overreactions on social media acting like, oh, he's awful. He's, you know, playing the worst football. No, listen, who was awful and playing the worst football was on the other side of the field. And that was Stetson Bennett. His interceptions were just right to our, you know, right to the Cowboys defenders. And, you know, I mean, like, he honestly should have thrown five interceptions, not just four. So, but yeah, no.
He was trying hard. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure that I have, you know, not as good stuff to say as Brandon will have, because Brandon believes that he could, you know, be the future QB1 of the Cowboys.
Oh, yeah.
And get re-signed. But
Ollie, like yeah. this literally, I swear, I was just ragging on these guys before we started recording about WWE stuff, as I usually do when I work with Brandon.
Yep.
And you know, it's just giving WWE battle right here. And like Calvin and I are sitting back like the audience, like, what's gonna happen next?
Who's the face and who's the heel, though? That's the question. I don't even
you're
know.
You're the heel, bro. What do you mean?
I'm a heel. Oh man, I probably would be, honestly, but I'm a nice guy. I don't want that reputation.
No, he is a great guy. Chris
Thank
and I
you.
Have had.
I appreciate
Chris,
it.
Chris and I have always had a lot of fun together. We've seen a couple. We've gone to a couple games together. I showed him around the great Carrier Dome in Syracuse, and he got to watch his team get beat by Syracuse. So, so that was just
upsetting.
Yeah, it was a great game. I got to storm the court, but that's for another day. But this whole Trey Lance thing, like. Chris, you were being nice, and I was like, you know, I was kind of giving you like, I was kind of giving you, you know, giving you crap. I almost said a swear word, but giving you crap on social media. My kids are gonna listen, so I don't want them saying bad words. But yeah, they're. I saw you give a compliment to Trey Lance, and I'm like, wait a second, Chris Holling's giving Trey Lance a compliment? Like, this is shocking. I never thought this would ever happen.
I don't hate Trey Lance. I just know he's not the QB1 of the Cowboys anywhere in the future.
All I'm saying is. It nothing would surprise me with the Cowboys, and it's more
that
so
would surprise
about,
me.
I mean Dak Prescott, you're right, his price has gone up, and let's see, CeeDee Lamb's price is pretty high right now, so they can't keep everybody, so it could be just being an odd man out, which would not be good with a franchise quarterback like Dak Prescott. But with Trey Lance, he completed 61% of his passes against guys. I'm just going to say this, I'm not trying to say this in a mean way. They're going to be bagging groceries after the preseason. So it's like a lot of these guys aren't even making NFL rosters. They're going to be playing. They might make a
practice. I love how you preface that with like not trying to be mean, but
but that's a fact. I mean, and McMath, to Jess's point, like yes, he was performing. He's been performing well in camp, but he let Trey Lance down with those two drops. Like that is inexcusable. Like it was one of those things where I'm like, you got to help your guy out here. Now Trey Lance.
Want to know
not
who also let down Trey Lance?
Here's the thing. Trey Lance had, to me, he had two really bad throws. The one to Cropper, where, let's be honest, if you want to call it a horrible throw, Cropper still put his hands on the ball in the corner of the end zone. So it was like one step too far. That's really what it was. And then the one to Johnson down the field, that was a flat-out miss. That was just a terrible throw. Even Trey Lance admitted that. He's like, I wish I could have that one back. Now, I will say this. Mike McCarthy – you know, some of these great Cowboys writers and whatnot, I'm not going to give them any credit, but there are some writers out there and I'm watching them, and they're, you know, they're spinning Mike McCarthy's words a little bit like that, you know, pretty much like in a way where Trey Lance is trash. That's the way they're kind of, you know, putting it out there. That's the way I'm interpreting it. Now, here's the thing. If you actually read into it, Coach McCarthy likes his command of the offense. He threw no picks. Sure, he didn't throw for 10 yards an attempt. He averaged 4.6 yards attempt. But the fact was, he was making smart decisions with the football. Like, there were some really good throws in there. One to Ryan Flournoy as well. I just want to put that out there, that future connection. But all jokes aside, he had two bad throws. But Mike McCarthy also said he is showing good progress. Like, I'm not sitting here trying to say he's going to be anointed QB1 out of the gate. I always said he has to show enough in preseason for the Cowboys to justify keeping him next year. That is the big thing. Right now, it's a B- for me. And I'm being, you know, a B- because I know what he can do. Like, I know what he can do. I've seen what he can do with the runs. He had a 19-yard run that's elite running ability. Like, he's the best athlete in the quarterback room. No offense to Dak. It's just a fact. Like, he runs a 4.3, 4.4. Trey Lance is – athlete-wise, he's the best athlete in the quarterback room.
Chris's eyes just about
– I don't know about that one. I've seen Dak do somersaults into the end zone. I've seen him. I've seen him put his body on the line. I've seen him run through stiff arm people.
Dak Prescott might be faster than Jalen Brooks, just so you know. He runs like a 4.7. So I'm just –
why is Jalen Brooks getting bagged here? What did he do? Why is his speed getting bagged?
What's going on? I was about to say,
Jalen Brooks didn't deserve that
shit. And actually, I do like Jalen Brooks, by the way. I just have to bust Chris.
He looked good when he burnt that corner. I mean
– what's that?
I said his speed looked good when he got by that cornerback for that big reception he had.
Yeah, I don't think that corner's making the roster. So, I mean, you know, he'll probably be playing in the CFL.
He's one of the first corners to go on the field, so he's got to be pretty decently high on their depth chart.
Well, I mean, hey, there's a few guys on the Cowboys depth chart that I didn't see out there that I don't know why they weren't out there, but that's neither here nor there. But I'm just going to say this one last thing about Trey. this last thing about Trey Lance. He threw plenty of catchable passes. There were just a few that, like, the receivers definitely missed. Like, these guys, some of these guys were just not, they were just not with it. And to me, it skewed Trey Lance's numbers a little bit. I don't think his footwork is completely there yet. I feel like he still has some mechanical flaws in his game, obviously, because he overthrows. But I will say this. I would rather have a guy overthrow than underthrow, because 9 times out of 10, if you're underthrowing the football, that leads to interceptions. So if you're going to do one thing or the other and you can't complete the pass, I'm okay with an overthrow. It's better than underthrowing it and have a potential interception. So Trey Lance did have a mixed bag, but like people are like really crapping on him on social media. Like, oh my God, they got to get rid of this guy right now. That's an overreaction. I think he's going to do much better in week 2, because how he ended week 1 in the preseason, that last drive, he was showing people that he has the ability to be on this team. And I do think if he can turn that momentum into a great game in week 2 and then week 3 in the preseason, I think he has a very good shot at beating Cooper Rush out for the backup job, in my opinion.
See, and that's what I come back to is him versus Cooper Rush. And like, obviously Rush didn't play much, but like he played one series and
he looked better in that one series, honestly. Yeah.
You know what you're getting out of Cooper Rush.
Right. You know exactly what you're getting. And that's exactly what he looked like in this game. And for Trey Lance to beat Cooper Rush, like we know physically he can do things Cooper Rush can never do, but also he still needs to do the things that Cooper Rush can do. And he didn't in this game. Jess, the three of us have talked about Trey Lance literally, I think, every single week for the last like month. And it's never been on the script, by the way. We've never said, okay, we're going to talk about Trey Lance. Brandon, this guy, we're talking about the Jalen's, and then he's like, hey, by the way, like, they're both going to catch 20 touchdowns when Trey Lance is out there dropping dimes.
It's always that dang Brandon. Let me tell you.
It is. For a fresh perspective, though, on the quarterbacks, Jess, initial impressions of Trey Lance from this game and also from what you've seen, you know, leading up to this point.
You know, okay. I'm going to go – this is going to sound like I'm veering one way and then I'm going to, like, turn the wheel very quickly here. So let me just say, I agree with Brandon in saying – that there's a ton of overreactions going on right now. A ton. Like, I couldn't even scroll through the timeline anymore, because if I rolled my eyes anymore, like, I don't know what would have gone down. Because I don't know what else anybody expected to see from Trey Lance other than what was shown and what we saw. Because here's the thing. You're talking about a guy that was coming back from injury and then was pretty much ignored by the 49ers. Like, when I say ignored, I mean, you don't exist. I forgot that you existed kind of vibes. Like, you don't pertain to my world. No attention to you, no attention to detail, no coaching you. Like, the 49ers really took this guy and shoved him as far off to the side as they could. So then the Cowboys come along, pick him up. And let me just say, from the time that I started seeing him in practice, his first practice that was open to media that I saw to now, completely different guy. Like, had you been able to see Trey Lance last preseason, it would have been 10 times worse than what you saw. And so, again, it's a process. And not only that, you're talking about a guy that had to relearn a new system when everybody else was relearning it last year. It's not like he walked into an already built system that was established. Dak was also learning next to him what this new system was, meanwhile trying to mentor and teach this young guy that literally came in stripped of all confidence. I mean, I'm telling you, all three of them would be doing their quarterback drills, and it would be like Dak and Cooper Rush in sync doing their thing and their turns and all of that. And Trey was like panicking, like, oh, I'm going the wrong way. You could just see the anxiety that he was living with being where he was when the Cowboys first got him. Okay. Now he's in sync with them. He asks questions. He's not as quiet as he was in the locker room. He speaks up more. And he's more vocal, because why? He's slowly getting that confidence back that I'm telling you, the 49ers really did him dirty with throughout that entire process of letting him go. So for me, I don't know what high expectations people had. And I think it was amplified because of the Dak contract situation. If Dak was not in a contract year, this would not be a conversation of high expectations for Trey Lance. It would be intriguing, sure, but it wouldn't be like, oh, is he the future of the Cowboys to the extent that it is now and people being so let down by what they saw in preseason. That being said, I don't think you're going to see another Trey Lance game be what it was like this game. This was the nerves game. This was the jitters game. It's out of the system. And what he does going forward is who I think he is as a player and where he's at. A lot of those passes, Brandon, I'm going to disagree, were on him. Like, the receivers can only run their routes as hard as they can and get where they need to go. And again, that's stuff that comes with time. That's stuff that you're so used to seeing Dak Prescott do so beautifully that you see a quarterback not do it and you're like, oh, that happens? And even Cooper Rush does a beautiful job of it. And it's because you're so used and acclimated to seeing a quarterback do their job so well that you forget that quarterbacks take time to grow those kind of skills. And not only that, I agree, his footwork, all over the place, and he panics. That's the biggest thing I think Trey Lance needs to work on is his composure and his poker face. Man panics, and defenders can sniff it out. Like, his body language tells me, I'm panicking, I'm going to throw the ball somewhere, and luckily he was throwing it away. Great instincts there, but a lot of defenders are going to sniff that out and take advantage of it. So, you know, what I will say, ball placement he needs to work on, especially when he's rolling out of the pocket and he's, you know, first look isn't there, second check isn't there, and third, like, he panics. He starts to panic the more time goes by. And that offensive line, as shuffled as it was giving him a decent amount of time to make those throws. So I can't even blame that it wasn't your starting O-line, because for the most part, it was holding up better than I expected, even for a preseason game. So for me, I'm not going to tamper my, you know, expectations of Trey Lance and what he should be as a quarterback and where he's at until the end of preseason. Because really, I don't know what else anybody expected to see. Yes, you would like it to be a little bit better. But at the end of the day, you're talking about a guy that hasn't played a game in, what, over a year at this point, and the last time he played, he went down an injury. That also mentally takes toll to come back. When you're playing your first game post-injury, no matter if it's, you know, 2 months later, 3 months later, a year later, it also does mess with you mentally. So I'm interested to kind of, when the team gets back, poke his brain about where he was with that aspect of his game. But overall, I don't think it was as bad as people are saying. Like, the sky's not falling, guys. I know Dak is not signed. CD's not signed. You have, like, a million other things to be stressed about. But, like, just focus on what's in front of you, which is, like, you need to build this roster and see who fits on the 53. Not necessarily, is Trey Lance the future? Why are you thinking that far ahead? It's preseason. Calm down.
I completely agree. And as a longtime Kyle Shanahan hater, always very ready to bring up that the 49ers did him wrong, like they did Brandon Ayuk wrong back in the day when they you know, benched him and then he came in and played great and they were like, oh, why did you ever have him on the bench? And now we know how the Brandon Ayuk thing is all going on. Of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Brandon Ayuk went to the illustrious Arizona State University. As far as Trey Lance goes, I mean, I agree with everything that we're saying here of, like, this was his first game in a very long time. Like, a lot of the expectations, I think, were inflated by the Dak contract narrative. Really, as far as I'm concerned, I tweeted this out during the game as well. I said that watching Trey Lance feels like watching myself playing on the new College Football 25 video game. You know, I said I've got some moves. I know what I'm doing, but I haven't quite mastered this revamped passing mechanic on the new controller. Because there were some throws, just like watching myself play, where, you know, it gets overthrown, it gets underthrown, like it's just not quite on target. But also, you know, and to Trey Lance's credit, like he didn't have any turnovers. He didn't have any just like absolutely brutal like mental mistakes. It was a lot of it was just the fundamentals, the footwork, the passing accuracy, you know, getting a little too reliant on the fact that he is, you know, incredibly athletic and can usually maneuver his way out of any pocket collapsing. So that's kind of where I'm at with what we saw from Trey Lance. Another thing that
looked like Hellman, it's almost like he looked like a young quarterback in a preseason game. That's insane. Like, I'm literally watching, who is this? Let's see, the Chiefs and the Jags right here. I'm literally watching it on the screen in front of me. And I'm like, oh, look, another young quarterback that looks like they're playing in a preseason game. Like, genuinely, it would not be this inflated if he didn't play for the Cowboys. And that goes across the board.
And here's the other thing, too. If you look at the ages, he's actually younger than some of the prospects that came out of this year's
class. Yeah.
Like, I believe he's younger than Bo Nix, if I'm not mistaken. And he's also younger than Michael Penix. I mean, so it's,
most people are younger than Bo Nix at this point. Well, he was in college forever.
I think really
the point is, though, he's still, like Jess said, he's still a young guy. Like, he hasn't had a lot of reps and he's been injured. Yeah. The Niners did him really dirty, like Jess said, and I 100% agree with her on that. He was essentially damaged goods when he came to Dallas. That's as simple as that. And it's about rebuilding him and rebuilding his confidence. Because he has all the tools. It's just there has to be some refinement. And it's also between the ears as well. Like, if he can put all of that together, the sky's the limit. Like, you wouldn't, the Niners wouldn't have drafted him as high as they did just a few years ago if they didn't see something in him and give up all that draft capital. So I think he's still young enough where, you know, he's 24. So he's still young where he can still work through things. And you know what? I'm just going to put it out there. I mean, I'm not saying I want Dak to leave, but Dak, you know, maybe Dak signs a shorter deal than we expect. We don't know what the terms are going to be at this point. Who knows? My guess is as good as yours. Maybe he signs a 2-3 year deal. And then by then, maybe Trey Lance is still around and then he's ready to take the reins. I'm not saying that's happening, but I'm saying anything is possible. I just hope Dak is signed because Dak is the franchise quarterback. And I think our best shot at a Super Bowl is with Dak Prescott in the future. And he was wearing Mickey Mouse the other day. Yes.
I wore it in honor of Dak. I don't think anybody noticed. It's the same shirt he wore before the preseason game.
I did not notice, but that is an excellent pull.
I just want to say something real quick. I think it's pretty obvious what this depth chart is going to look like. It's going to be Dak 1, Cooper 2, Trey Lance 3. I'm sorry. I think Cooper Rush is 5-1 as a starter in the NFL. Like, if the Cowboys are in a winning position, if they're in contention for a division title, if they're in contention for anything, if that goes down, Cooper Rush is going to get the nod over Trey Lance. I don't see a situation where they trust Trey Lance more than Cooper Rush because Cooper Rush has shown that he can kind of pull them out of the fire like that. However, if it's really, really bad, and this is like 2020 vibes, like, I hope it doesn't come down to this. If like Dak is like really badly hurt and the team's record is just not good, then I think maybe Trey Lance plays a lot more because then you're kind of in a development mode and you're just kind of, you know, I guess you're kind of mailing the season in and you're kind of just, you know, trying to develop Trey Lance and seeing what he can be for your future. That, I think. But I mean, realistically, if the Cowboys need their backup to step up, I don't see how they're ever going to put Trey Lance in over Cooper Rush if they need a win. And I think that's okay. I think having Trey Lance as your third string quarterback is really good. And I think a lot of teams around the league would love to have Trey Lance as their third string quarterback. I think that, like, that's a good thing for the Cowboys.
I agree with that.
Chris, like, sorry, Hellman, real quick. Yeah, I just want to say, like, to that point, again, there's no need to look past this season yet because at the end of the day, Dak's deal could get done at any point. Truly, we don't know. There's no gauge on when that can get done. And as soon as that is done, we're manifesting. I'm saying as soon as it's done because we're manifesting it happens. as soon as that gets done, this Trey Lance conversation is going to be zipped. I guarantee it. You know, it's only amplified because of the state of Dak's contract negotiations being so in limbo and so unknown right now. But at the end of the day, you have a trusty backup in Cooper Rush. He's nothing shiny. He's nothing new. But he also has gone through the same kind of offensive challenges as Dak has as your quarterback. So he has that upper hand immediately. The guys know what they're getting with him. It's pretty much like, you know, what he told me in the locker room is, as far as a backup quarterback, he said, my job is to pretty much emulate what Dak is doing on the field at the most basic level and just execute to where if he's out, I'm in. You don't see any differences. It's seamless in the way we're operating things. And I think he does exactly that. You don't really see like the fancy Dak offense, right? Like he's obviously not going to be a Dak Prescott, but he's consistent in that. I do think he's your backup quarterback. And for Trey Lance, that's not a bad deal. You get another year working in the same room as Dak Prescott, Cooper Rush. You get to work, you know, under Mike McCarthy's offense again. You get to learn and grow and then, you know, kind of see if there's a spot for you, whether it be with the Cowboys as a backup, whether it be with another NFL team, you really get this year no matter what. So to me, there's no like lose-lose situation for a guy like Trey Lance in this situation.
I think that's well said. All in all about this quarterback room, although Chris did take us to a dark place invoking the 2020 season.
I didn't want to. I'm just saying.
It's fitting for you like, brooding in your bat cave. So I want to pivot to a brighter topic, which is, you know, we've gone, you know, this long without really digging in and talking about the Mike Zimmer defense that we got to watch. And it was funny when the Cowboys, when they did the coin toss and it was announced that the Rams were going to get the ball first, I tweeted out and said, like, what a privilege we get to see Mike Zimmer right off the bat. And Chris tweeted back at me and said, this was after, you know, the Rams had moved the ball a little bit.
They were driving.
You were like, not much of a privilege, is it? Well, yeah. Chris, how you like those four interceptions?
Here's my thing. Like, cool, but like I could have gotten those interceptions if I was on the field. They were thrown right to the defenders. It wasn't like it was some crazy scheme or anything. Like all those interceptions were among the worst interceptions I've seen a professional.
You got hands?
I definitely got hands. Come on.
Well, no, I mean, like, I know you got hands, but can you actually catch?
Yes, easily could. But here's the thing.
Go to right now. I need to see right now. Go find a neighbor. And
regardless.
Next week we'll be doing this at Brandon's house and we can test this out.
Let's do it.
Here's the thing. Cool. I mean, like it was fine. And I saw that he called it without the play sheet, which is cool. But I mean, let's not pretend like this defense, like those four interceptions, like it wasn't super impressive to me. Oh, like I think God. That.
Oh
no! God. Okay, listen. If that was Matt Stafford, then awesome. That's a great game. But Stetson Bennett showed that if he wasn't in that Georgia offense, he would have done nothing. Come on. This is at the end of the day, it was all right. I just feel like the defense wasn't that stifling. I mean, it seemed like the Rams were getting down the field. Whittington, who was getting down the field. He had 74 receiving yards. Boston Scott had 68 rushing yards on 4.5 carries. I think that – and, like, here's the thing. This is all fine because most of the starting defense didn't play. But I think that Kalen Carson didn't play as good as what everyone's been talking about, and that's okay. I don't think that – I mean, I don't think it was like he was getting exposed, but I mean, like he wasn't locking or seatbelting anyone up either. And I don't think Eric Scott had a great game at all. I understand he got his pick, but again, I could have caught that pick. You know, I mean, like Stetson Bennett threw it right at him. To me, the defense played all right. I give it like maybe like a B, but I don't think it was an insanely impressive performance by the defense because at the end of the day, Stetson Bennett was giving them all those turnovers.
Oh, I mean, gosh, God.
And I'm for Mike Zimmer. I want the defense to be great. I think that the defense is going to have to carry the offense this year because the offense will have no running game. So I think it's going to be on the defensive back with Trayvon Diggs, with De'Ron Bland, with Micah Parsons.
Chris, I love you, but what?
Like, correct. What am I?
What am I
wrong about?
When was the last time a team had four interceptions in a preseason game?
But they were all thrown right to the defender.
It doesn't matter. Like an interception.
It's not impressive. Awful.
As we cover with Ryan Flournoy, you still got to catch the ball when it gets thrown to you.
Even if they're not catchable, they're making plays out of these like non-catchable balls that like not even though the Rams receivers were picking up.
I don't think the defense played bad, but they also crumbled in the final possession. They didn't step up when they needed to. They could have gotten a stop, and they let Stetson Bennett still, as bad as he is, drive down the field and win the game for them.
Are you sure you're a Cowboys fan? Like,
I love the Cowboys. I love the Cowboys. Confused.
Chris, here's the thing. You don't have to agree that they were like boom, fantastic plays, but when guys are going out there and stepping up to make you an interception in preseason, like consistently, that should tell you what the coaching is doing. Like, not even just Mike Zimmer. I'm saying like Al Harris and what he's doing for
the team. I love Al Harris. I think he's awesome.
Like, it's changing career trajectories here. Like, you have young guys that are already making plays in the preseason, and again, it's just preseason, but they're doing it consistently at training camp as well. They were doing it through the scrimmage. They've been doing it to Dak Prescott, which I'm sure everybody's like, oh, Dak, they're another pick. It is hard to throw and pass against this DB like unit as a whole with what they've been doing and how it's been working. And schematically, when you peel it back to Mike Zimmer, it's just so much more basic and simple. You don't have guys that feel like they need to play 10 different positions here. Marquise Bell, look what happens when you slide him back and he goes back to what he's naturally used to doing here. However, that working linebacker, I think, is going to come back around. Nick Harris tweeted about this last night to like really help open his scope up. But to me, it's impressive in the sense that you have young guys that are hungry to make plays right off the bat. That's not coachable. Like, to have that kind of mentality wide across your DBs in general, like, you can't coach that. You can't coach that hunger to make the 53. You can't coach guys to want it that bad and make plays happen in a game time scenario. In practice, okay, cool. Do it 10 more times. But
if you can't coach it, then why should I be impressed that Mike Zimmer had the scheme?
Because they didn't have to coach it. It's preseason one, game one, and they're already doing it. The defense didn't play good.
I'm not saying that they played bad. I'm just saying I'm not blown away like it was the best defensive performance ever. So like, I give it a B plus
here at the end of the season. We're gonna play this back, and I just want to see where they are at that point with
how impressed or not impressed this defense will have to be. I really hope so. I hope that the defense is awesome because, like I said, I think that the defense is gonna have to be the better unit of football for them to have a really good season.
I mean, to be fair, I think that's any winning team. Like, you have to have a solid, consistent defense. And to me, what makes me excited about it is you're coming off of a historic pick six Jaron Bland season, and then you see these younger players already carrying that over into a preseason, and it's going to continue leaking through. To me, that tells me there's a sense of consistency with what they're coaching.
And you have the biggest ball hawk in the NFL debatably coming back, too, with Trayvon Diggs. So, exactly. I mean, I think that's super exciting. And, too, yeah. I was going to say this, too. I think that Andrew Booth is going to fit in this system really, really well because, you know, like, as a Clemson fan, I was super high on Andrew Booth coming into the draft because he was one of the best ball hawks I'd seen at Clemson, you know, throughout his entire career. He was coming up with these most insane athletic in-air adjustment catches that I've seen a cornerback make. And I think that that's going to blend in super well with Al Harris. And I think that it's going to be really, really good. I'm excited for Mike Zimmer. I'm excited for Mike Zimmer. Cool. I don't want to come across like I'm hating on the defensive performance. I think they played fine,
Mike Zimmer's got swag. He doesn't.
I think they played fine, but they didn't play like exceptional. That's all I'm saying.
Mike Zimmer has such a great feel for the game. He calls great plays without even looking at a play sheet, and he draws it up. Gets four interceptions. A guy like Josh Butler, who was in the USFL last year, I believe, Michigan Panthers, I believe it was. Like, a guy like him, he's playing very well. He's a kind of a late bloomer. I think he's like 27, 28, somewhere in that range. And he's a West Mesquite, Texas guy as well. So he's got that Texas connection. But like, that's the thing. Like, Mike Zimmer knows how to coach. He knows how to coach players. Al Harris is a great cornerbacks coach. He could be a future defensive coordinator someday. That's how great of a mind that Al Harris has for the game. And let's not forget, I'm the elder statesman of the four of us. I remember watching Al Harris as an Eagle. So that was painful, but
you always say you're the elder statesman. That's like your thing.
I am. I'm the old guy. You guys are all in your 20s.
What am I then?
I've been past that for a long time.
I'm barely in my 20s. Like, we don't have to talk about it.
I say, what's the opposite of an elder statesman? What's a young adjective?
Young pup.
Like a young buck. Pup.
Young. I guess buck, that's me. I guess.
Yeah. Young buck.
Young.
Yeah.
Buck.
Yeah. I used to call you like young pup. I'm like the
young pup. I'd be a big puppy.
Brandon, since you mentioned the Michigan Panthers, I have to mention, since we're talking Cowboys, current head coach of the Michigan Panthers is Dallas Cowboys legend Mike Nolan. So there's another spy from Josh Butler.
Why do you keep bringing up the 2020 season? Like, what is wrong with you?
Hey, Chris started it.
Hey, listen, that 2020 season, though, was massive for the Cowboys because they got the best defensive player in the NFL after that. So
I love your positivity there. Yeah. Thank you.
There's always a positive, especially, you know.
You didn't bring us out of that.
I was about to say, as bad as the season was in 2015, it was great for the team because they got Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott. And
yeah, they wasted their pick on an invaluable position.
That was not a wasted.
Instead of getting Jalen Ramsey.
Okay, but if they got Jalen Ramsey, who knows how that entire era goes.
No, like, Trayvon Diggs.
Could have gone completely. Yeah, exactly. The whole era could have gone differently. I have no regrets about picking Ezekiel Elliott.
You don't get the all-pro corner because you got another all-pro corner.
Like, all right. Well, are they the first seed and they go 13 and 3 in 2016?
Jalen Ramsey and Byron Jones. Like,
okay, but then maybe Jalen Ramsey is out of here by now, like he was out of
Patrick Surtain as well. If Patrick Surtain would have fouled just one more pick, it wouldn't have been the whole Micah Parsons situation either. So, and Surtain's a pretty darn good corner, so it would have worked out. I'm glad we got Micah, so that that worked out.
Yeah, that's the best player in that draft.
As for the guys that played defense this past week, though, that I think they did look good. I was especially impressed by the linebackers. A bunch of guys that honestly, like, I knew they were on the roster, but I didn't really pay much attention to these guys, like Brock Mogensen, Jason Johnson, Buddy Johnson. These guys, I mean, even Overshown and Damone Clark and Maris Leofau, like, these guys were flying all over the place. And it was just so much fun seeing how quick they were to get downhill, how quick they were to trigger on the run and fly to where the ball is. And the DBs, I thought, I mean, Kalen Carson didn't, absolutely blow us away, but I didn't really think he wasn't getting burned. Unfortunately, Eric Scott was, and it was a tough outing for him until that interception. But Josh Butler had a good game. I also thought Keymon Hall had a really good game. Seeing my guy, Julius Wood, we talked about him on here a couple weeks ago, really great undrafted free agent. I don't know how he makes this roster just because of the numbers game. There's a bunch of other really talented DBs on this roster that should make it. But I was impressed with the linebackers, the defensive backs. Wanted to see more on the defensive line. Shaka Tony, Alquidi Muhammad just brought into the fold. Marshawn Neyland didn't really wow me the way that I hoped he would. Chauncey Golston got a little bit of run. Viliami Fihoko didn't really jump out. Mozzie Smith looked better. He looked good early on. Seemed to kind of – he wore down a little bit as the game went on. But really the main takeaway for me with this defense was they didn't have, like, actual pass rushers out there, which makes sense. Micah didn't play. DeMarcus Lawrence didn't play. Osa didn't play. And I think you really saw that coming into play later down the stretch when the Rams were on that final drive. They're throwing it. Like, there's not time for them to be running the ball, be methodical. Stetson Bennett's just dropping back. And they had Justin Rogers, their seventh-round pick, a massive, massive dude. Like, he is a nose tackle. And they had him, playing the three-tech, trying to push the pocket. And that's just not his game. And I think that speaks to kind of what Mike Zimmer was working with in this game, too, is, like, you're trying to rush the passer in that situation, but you don't have pass rushers to do it with. So that's a big reason why I'm not.
Hey, how would I got to cut you off real quick?
The collapse at the end.
I love the Justin Rogers pick too, because he plays a position and he was drafted in the same round in the same school as the legend Jay Ratliff. So if we can get a little Jay Ratliff out of Justin Rogers, I'll be happy. He's looking good so far though.
I think what this defensive line's always needed is, like, bigger, wider, girthier bodies in the middle. Because
you're using girth now? I'm so proud of you, man.
Oh my, Brandon. But having a guy, that big in the middle of the defensive line, I think, is what the Cowboys need to stop those runs, especially, because I think that the reason they couldn't stop the run very well, against the Packers in that wild card round is because they didn't really have big guys in the middle, and then you had smaller linebackers. And I think that that's just not how you defend the run. But I do think that, I think just going back to what Jess was talking about earlier, with Marquise Bell, I think that Marquise Bell playing linebacker isn't the right fit for him. But I think that playing 12 games at linebacker is going to help him as a defensive player, because the linebacker is really the quarterback of the defense. They have to know where everyone is. They play the game completely different. And I think his pursuit angles is definitely going to be much better now. You know, his open field tackling. Like, I think that he's going to bring a lot of traits that linebackers have that separate them from a safety. And now he's going to have that in a safety's body and a safety's athleticism. So I think that is probably going to do wonders for his game. And, you know, I think that, I think heading into the season, it's going to be Wilson and Malik Hooker as the two starters, but I think Bell is going to have a big impact. And I think he could be like a Swiss Army knife for Mike Zimmer's defense.
Ah, Marquise Bell, man, I'm so glad like he had the showing he did in this game. Oh my goodness. Because let's face it, he did not play as a linebacker needed to play last year. And I don't fault him for that at all. He stepped up in terms of like injury, LVE getting out, Damone having to shift, he was a team player in the sense he was willing to go. He was willing to learn. But, oh, my God, Marquise Bell at safety now. He is just he's going to get better and better. And what I like about him is how wide of a range he has now with his vision because he had to play linebacker and how much better he is with communicating that to those around him. Keep in mind, you don't have a Jayron Kearse anymore. You don't have that leader on safeties that Jayron Kearse was. Keep in mind, when Van Der Esch went out, Jayron Kearse also had a green dot. So it's not out of spectrum to say that Marquise Bell could want that. Damone Clark's also worn the green dot before in preseason games. I'd be interested to see Eric Kendricks is obviously going to wear it this season, but what younger guys are kind of in the training to be that communicator, I think Marquise Bell just put his name right in that hat because it shows you how well he was able to diagnose, act quickly, sideline to sideline this guy, and absolutely just play diagnosing off the bat, made it look way too easy. And again, it's only preseason, but this is leaps and bounds compared to the Marquise Bell you even saw at safety, you know, a year ago pre-Van Der Esch injury. Like, Marquise Bell wasn't a guy you were hyped about seeing, but now I'm really happy for him in the sense that he's using kind of that season last year where it was tough for him and now bouncing back to be better than he was before.
Yeah, I think it's going to end up being so much better in the long run for him having gone through that. We've talked about the defense now. We've talked about the offense. Real quick, just going around the horn with special teams, we've now gotten a full week of preseason games all around the league. We've gotten plenty of opportunity to see this new kickoff rule in action. Just real quick, first impressions, love it, hate it, just not used to it yet. Chris, how are you feeling about the new kickoff?
I'm not really a fan. I wouldn't say I hate it because, I mean, it's kind of – I still think it's a little early. We haven't seen real kick – we haven't seen real kick returners, you know, really show it off. But I hate it more not because of the actual kickoff. I hate it because of the onside kick rules that have come out. You've completely taken it pretty much out of the game. It might as well not be in the game because you have to announce that you're doing a kick. You can only do it when you're losing. You can only do it in the fourth quarter. It's just completely taken away an element of excitement in the game. Like what's more exciting than in that Saints and Colts Super Bowl when they came out in the second half and they surprised them and went for that onside kick? It was a big reason that they won that Super Bowl, if I'm correct. At that point, you might as well just give the opposing team your offensive playbook. Like, it just completely kills the creativity. So yeah, I'm not a fan of the new kickoff rules. It's another way that Roger Goodell is contributing to the no fun league, and I'm just not a fan.
Tell us how you really feel.
Yeah, tell us, Chris.
Brandon, do you hate it as much as Chris with every fiber of your being?
I mean, Chris has a good point when it comes to, like, you're not getting, like, the Turpins of the world returning kicks right now under this new format. So we haven't really seen it in its, you know, in all its glory, I guess, so to speak. But I'm not a huge fan of it anyways. Like, I'm all for safety. Like, I don't want people getting their, like, you know, having head injuries and things like that. Like, I want the game to be as safe as possible. But this is also a physical game. Like, for me, I wish they would have done something different when they kick off, where they would have maybe – you know, have the kicker actually, you know, they should bring it back five yards potentially. So there's more kick returns. Like that's how I would like it. Cause you're seeing so many touchbacks anyways, regardless of the new format versus what we used to see for years and years and years. So for me, like, if you're going to bring the kick return aspect to it really back, like, I wish they would just move it back 5 yards, because we have kickers nowadays, they're kicking it through the field goal post from where they're kicking right now. So it's like the return game is not great. And I quoted it last week too, like, one of the greatest kick returners of all time, Devin Hester, doesn't like it. And, you know, he knows a thing or two about returning kicks. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. I take his word for it over anybody else's, because he's an expert, and he doesn't like it. So I don't like it.
One thing I want to say just super, super quickly is that I hate it, but if Turpin ends up scoring like multiple kickoff returns, then I love it. Like, I mean, like, I'm very open to changing my opinion if it works for the public's benefit.
Nice. Good job, Chris.
Easily swayed. I love that. No, I figured we weren't going to see much from it from anybody this preseason. Mike McCarthy even said you're going to see a very vanilla-based, you know, kickoff from every team, because why are you going to give them the secret sauce in preseason? Like, you're not actually going to see what this looks like until the actual season starts, because nobody's going to give away what those secrets are going to be to get the returners to the end zone. Like, at the end of the day, you're just seeing a very watered down version of it, which is not going to be exciting throughout the rest of the preseason. So I challenge everybody listening to this to, like, wait until the actual season and then decide whether you like it or not. And here's the thing, returners in general weren't getting much opportunity with the old kickoff rule. That's why Bones Fossil really implemented this change, was because it was at an all-time low. The returners were getting opportunity because of just how it was set up. So, you know, Kevontae Turpin, for example, you want him to go and I was laughing watching the game yesterday. They brought up his plays from when he was wearing number 2 when he was first with the Cowboys a couple of years ago. And I was like, oh man, I forgot he wore number 2, like, what's he doing? Like, who is that? You know? And I was like, oh my gosh, that's true. But overall, it was implemented so that way you get more opportunity in special teams. And I guarantee you, when Cowboys are starting at the 40 because the opposing kicker messed up and didn't kick in that zone right there, like, no one's going to be complaining about these rules. It is set up for player safety. And look, I get you, like, the entertainment factor of the game, but I also get, like, the safety factor of the game too, which, like, I want to see these guys be able to play with their kids as they get older, and I want to see them have healthy lifestyles past 30 years old. I think if you can make it safer in a way that is also more challenging for them, because you even have a guy like Brandon Aubrey who comes from a soccer background, and you have to aim how you're kicking this a little bit differently now. Like, it's not as easy of a kickoff roll as it seems. There's just little logistics that make it more difficult for everybody. What I do wonder, though, essentially, is how this will change kind of the, I think, cornerback position, because that's typically where you see cornerback guys get their, I guess, more better opportunity in special teams, which a guy like CJ Goodwin, a smaller body guy, it's not going to bode well for this kind of contact that's going to be so close because of how close everybody's lined up. So I wonder if going forward, like years down the road, if they decide to keep this pass this year, if that's the position that you're going to kind of see more hefty guys be a little longer, a little stronger, a little taller, a little thicker going into seasons to come because of something like that. But overall, I haven't seen it in full force to know how much I actually like it or how much I don't. So ask me in like 4 weeks and I'll give you a better, I guess, opinion on it. But overall, if it's keeping people safe and it's giving, you know, Kevontae Turpin, whoever else, whether it be Deuce or one of the Jalens or David Durden, an opportunity to take it all the way down, like, that's entertaining, that's fun, and it also just keeps more people safe in the league, which I'm all for.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the safety aspect that it introduces. I also think it's just, it's going to give more opportunity, like you were talking about, Jess. Michael Lopez, who works in analytics and data for the NFL, he actually tweeted this out earlier on Monday. For kickoff stats, in specifically in the first week of the preseason, so narrowing the sample size for the last 3 years, in 2022, the rate of kickoffs that were actually returned were 64%. Last year was 65%. So far this year, in the first week of the preseason, it's up to 81%. So we're seeing significantly more opportunities. the average field position of kickoffs specifically that were returned, so not counting touchbacks, the average field position was, in 2022 was 23.6. In 2023, it was 22.7. This year in the first week, it's up to 28.5. So you're getting longer returns. You're getting, you know, you're getting more for it. And also it's something to factor into the strategy as well, given that a touchback now brings it out to the 30 instead of the 25. So it adds an extra layer of strategy into how they kick it off. Jess, as you were talking about with Brandon Aubrey needing to aim, as opposed to in the past, the Cowboys have really just gone for a kicker who can boot that thing out the back of the end zone. It probably bodes well now to be a little more strategic about making them return it, and then how you go and cover those kicks when you return it. So I'm a big fan. It does look weird, but like, you know, it'll take a little bit of getting used to. And I think in the long run, like, this is going to be a huge, huge innovation for the game. But of course, we'll be here every single week to talk about the kickoff as we hopefully grow more accustomed to it. Man, Chris really hates it. So
I don't hate the kickoff rule as much as I hate the onside kick rule. I think that's
fair. I would like to see that part change.
That's so valid, because it also takes like a suspense away from special teams as well. You know what I mean? And I think it is interesting that they decided that it could only be in the fourth quarter. I think if they had the same rules as far as like, you know, you have to announce it and you have to be losing, but it was throughout the entire game, I think it'd be a little bit of a different conversation. But only capping it to that fourth quarter, if you're behind, like, no crap, you're going to go for the onside kick.
I also feel like, too, you know, just the fact that you have to announce it, like, that's crazy. That. Like, I was about to say, like, imagine the fact, like imagine if Fassel had to announce every time that they were going to do like a fake punt. Like, it would just completely take away from the strategy. Special teams, it takes away from the strategy. Because I mean, an onside kick is so hard to get even when it's a surprise. It's much harder for the team to recover it if you're the kickoff team than if you're the receiving team already. And if you announce it, then they're just going to send everyone there, and it's going to be way easier. So it's just, to me, it's just, it to me, it almost kills it. Like, I feel like it's going to be very difficult. It's going to be very difficult to pull it off. And honestly, like, I know that the Eagles were, you know, they were trying to get a rule passed where, like, instead of the onside, it could be a 4th-and-25 attempt. And then, you know, that honestly, at that point, that honestly would almost be better than these new onside kick rules.
I have a feeling that's where it's headed in with the onside kick anyway. Yeah. But we're still, you know, a little bit ways off. This is the kickoff we have for this year. So just like how the Cowboys shouldn't be looking forward to next year with Trey Lance and all of that stuff, bringing it all full circle. You know, we got to enjoy this kickoff rule while it's here and see how we'll get to it. And we can talk about that again next week once we've got another round of preseason games. And in general, just all Cowboys content. Who knows? Maybe next week we might even be talking about a contract extension or two, manifesting these things into existence. But until that, when we have the opportunity to talk about all those things, you know, be sure to like, rate, recommend all the different things. I don't know what, you know, hearts and upvotes, all the things. And for our incredible writer's block for this episode, for Chris Holland, for Brandon Clements, for our special guest, Jess Navarez, thank you for being here. David Hellman signing off for the writer's block. Remember always, go Cowboys.